He arrived back at his house at 10:15, got out of the car and started for the house. Halfway there, he turned back and opened the trunk. The hat sat inside, black and final, a real toad in an imaginary garden. He picked it up, not being so choosy of how he handled it this time, slammed the trunk shut, and went into the house. He stood in the front hallway, not sure what he wanted to do next, and suddenly, for no reason at all, he put the hat on his head. He shuddered when he did it, the way a man will sometimes shudder after swallowing a mouthful of raw liquor. But the shudder passed, and the hat felt like quite a good fit, actually. He went slowly into the master bathroom, turned on the light, and positioned himself in front of the mirror. He almost burst out laughing. He looked like the man with the pitchfork in that Grant Wood painting, American Gothic. He looked like that even though the guy in the picture was bareheaded. The hat covered Mortaire completely, as it had covered Shooter's. If Shooter had hair, that was yet to be determined, although Mort supposed he would know for sure the next time he saw him, since Mort now had his chapeau, and just touched the tops of his ears. It was pretty funny. A scream, in fact. Then the restless voice in his mind asked, "Why'd you put it on? Who'd you think you'd look like? Him?" And the laughter died. Why had he put the hat on in the first place? "He wanted you to," the restless voice said quietly. "Yes, but why? Why would Shooter want Mort to put on his hat?" "Maybe he wants you to." "Yes?" He prompted the restless voice again. "Wants me to what?" He thought the voice had gone away and was reaching for the light switch when it spoke again. "To get confused," it said. The phone rang then, making him jump. He snatched the hat off guiltily, a little like a man who fears he might be caught trying on his wife's underwear, and went to answer it, thinking it would be Greg, and it would turn out Tom was at Greg's house. Yes, of course. That was what had happened. Tom had called Greg, had told him about Shooter and Shooter's threats, and Greg had taken the old man to his place, to protect him. It made such perfect sense that Mort couldn't believe he hadn't thought of it before. Except it wasn't Greg. It was Herb Creekmore. "Everything's arranged," Herb said cheerfully. "Mary Ann came through for me. She's a peach." "Mary Ann?" Mort asked stupidly. "Mary Ann Jaffrey at EQMM," Herb said. "EQMM, sewing season, June 1980. You understand these things, Buona." "Oh," Mort said. "Oh, good. Thanks, Herb. Is it for sure?" "Yep, you'll have it tomorrow. The actual magazine, not just a Xerox of the story. It's coming up from PA, Federal Express." "Have you heard anything else from Mr. Shooter?" "Not yet," Mort said, looking down at the black hat in his hand. He could still smell the odd, evocative aroma it held. "Well, no news is good news, they say. Did you talk to the local law?" Had he promised Herb he would do that? Mort couldn't remember for sure, but he might have. Best to play safe, anyway. Yes, old Dave Newsom didn't exactly burst a gasket. He thought the guy was probably just playing games. It was downright nasty to lie to Herb, especially after Herb had done him such a favor. But what sense would it make to tell him the truth? It was too crazy, too complicated. "Well, you passed it along. I think that's important, Mort. I really do." "Yes." "Anything else?" "No, but thanks a million for this. You saved my life." And maybe, he thought, that wasn't just a figure of speech. "My pleasure. Remember that in small towns, FedEx usually delivers right to the local post office, okay?" "Yeah." "How's the new book coming? I've really been wanting to ask." "Great," Mort cried heartily. "Well, good. Get this guy off your back and turn to it. Work has saved many a better man than you or me, Mort." "I know." "Best to your lady." "Thanks. Best to..." Herb stopped abruptly, and Mort could almost see him biting his lip. Separations were hard to get used to. Amputees kept feeling the foot which was no longer there, they said. "To you," he finished. "I got it," Mort said. "Take care, Herbert." He walked slowly out to the deck and looked down at the lake. There were no boats on it today. "I'm one step up, no matter what else happens. I can show the man the goddamn magazine. It may not tame him, but then again it may. He's crazy, after all, and you never know what people from the fabled tribe of the crazy folks will or won't do. That is their dubious charm. Anything is possible." It was even possible that Greg was at home, after all, he thought. He might have forgotten their meeting at the parish hall, or something totally unrelated to this business might have come up. Feeling suddenly hopeful, Mort went to the telephone and dialed Greg's number. The phone was on the third ring when he remembered Greg saying the week before that his wife and kids were going to spend some time at his in-laws. Megan starts school next year, and it'll be harder for them to get away, he'd said. So Greg had been alone. The hat. Like Tom Greenleaf. The car. The young husband and the old widower. The key. And how does it work? Why, as simple as ordering a Roger Whittaker tape off the TV. Shooter goes to Tom Greenleaf's house, but not in his station wagon. Oh, no, that would be too much like advertising. He leaves his car parked in Mort Rainey's driveway, or maybe around the side of the house. He goes to Tom's in the Buick, forces Tom to call Greg, probably gets Greg out of bed, but Greg has got Tom in his mind and comes in a hurry. Then Shooter forces Tom to call Sonny Trotz and tell Sonny he doesn't feel well enough to come to work. Shooter puts a screwdriver against old Tom's jugular and suggests that if Tom doesn't make it good, he'll be one sorry old coot. And Tom makes it good enough, although even Sonny, not too bright and just out of bed, realizes that Tom doesn't sound like himself at all. Shooter uses the screwdriver on Tom. And when Greg Carstairs arrives, he uses the screwdriver or something like it on him. And you've gone shit out of your mind. This is just a bad case of the screaming memes, and that's all. Repeat, that is all. That was reasonable. But it didn't convince him. It wasn't a Chesterfield. It didn't satisfy. Mort walked rapidly through the downstairs part of the house, tugging and twirling at his hair. What about the trucks? Tom's Scout, Greg's Ranger. Add the Buick, and you're thinking about three vehicles here. Four if you count in Shooter's Ford wagon, and Shooter is just one man. He didn't know, but he knew that enough was enough. When he arrived at the telephone again, he pulled the phone book out of its drawer and started looking for the town constable's number. He stopped abruptly. One of those vehicles was the Buick. My Buick. He put the telephone down slowly. He tried to think of a way Shooter could have handled all of the vehicles. Nothing came. It was like sitting in front of the word processor when you were tapped for ideas. You got nothing but a blank screen. But he did know he didn't want to call Dave Newsom. Not yet. He was walking away from the telephone, headed toward no place in particular, when it rang. It was Shooter. "Go to where we met the other day," Shooter said. "Walk down the path a little way. You impress me as a man who thinks the way old folks chew their food, Mr. Rainey. But I'm willing to give you all the time you need. I'll call back late this afternoon. Anybody you call between now and then is your responsibility." "What did you do?" he asked again. This time his voice was robbed of all force, little more than a whisper. "What in the world did you do?" But there was only a deadline. He walked up to the place where the path and the road came together, the place where he had been talking to Shooter when Tom Greenleaf had had the misfortune to see them. For some reason, he didn't like the idea of driving the Buick. The bushes on either side of the path were beaten down and skinned-looking, making a rough path. He walked jerkily down this path, knowing what he would find in the first good-sized copse of trees he came to. And he did find it. It was Tom Greenleaf's Scout. Both men were inside. Greg Carstairs was sitting behind the wheel with his head thrown back and a screwdriver, a Phillips this time, buried up to the hilt in his forehead, above his right eye. The screwdriver had come from a cupboard in the pantry of Mort's house. The red plastic handle was badly chipped and impossible not to recognize. Tom Greenleaf was in the back seat with a hatchet planted in the top of his head. His eyes were open. Dried brains had trickled down around his ears. Written along the hatchet's ash handle in faded but still legible red letters was one word, Rainey. It had come from the tool shed. Mort stood silently. A chickadee called. A woodpecker used a hollow tree to send Morse code. A freshening breeze was producing whitecaps on the lake. The water was a dark cobalt today, and the whitecaps made a pretty contrast. There was a rustling sound behind him. Mort wheeled around so fast he almost fell, would have fallen if he had not had the scout to lean against. It wasn't Shooter. It was a squirrel. It looked down at him with bright hate from where it was frozen halfway up the trunk of a maple which blazed with red fall fire. Mort waited for his galloping heart to slow. He waited for the squirrel to dash up the tree. His heart did. The squirrel did not. "He killed them both," he said at last, speaking to the squirrel. "He went to Tom's and my Buick. Then he went to Greg's and Tom's scout with Tom driving. He killed Greg. Then he had Tom drive down here and killed him. He used my tools to do both of them. Then he walked back to Tom's house. Or maybe he jogged. He looks rugged enough to have jogged. Sonny didn't think Tom sounded like himself, and I know why. By the time Sonny got that call, the sun was getting ready to come up, and Tom was already dead. It was Shooter, imitating Tom. And it was probably easy. From the way Sonny had his music cranked this morning, he's a little deaf anyway. Once he was done with Sonny Trots, he got in my Buick again and drove it back to the house. Greg's Ranger is still parked in his own driveway, where it's been all along. And that's how the squirrel scurried up the trunk and disappeared into the blazing red leaves. That's how it worked, Mort finished dully. Suddenly his legs felt watery. He took two steps back up the path, thought of Tom Greenleaf's brains drying on his cheeks, and his legs just gave up. He fell down, and the world swam away for a while.